Feeling sluggish from all the extra food, drinks, and celebrations? Kick off the new year with a science-backed reset. Quiksilver Scientific's PushCatch Liver Detox is a patented, simple two-step system that supports your liver, gut, and whole body detoxification, helping clear out what's slowing you down so you feel energized for the year ahead. It's more than a cleanse. Quiksilver Scientific's PushCatch Liver Detox helps reset your system. Get 10% off and free shipping at tryqs.com/podcast. Again, that's tryqs.com/podcast for 10% off and free shipping. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
Hello and welcome to Future Projection. This is episode 181 of the show. I am Carlos Collazo, joined as always by Ben Badler. What's going on, Ben?
Everything's good, Carlos. How you doing?
I'm okay. You know, it was a good day just today, okay, because I got a free entree at Chipotle. It was one of the days where I had enough points to cash in. But I also like can't look up into the right now. I had some, like, I don't know if I slept wrong on my neck or something in the gym, but like I've got this two monitor set up in front of me and like looking up is a pain. So I'm going to have to battle through to get through this podcast with you. I'm day to day with a neck cramp here, but no, can't complain. Go ahead.
Did you know that Chipotle points expire? I'm glad you used them because I did not realize that. Until I went into Chipotle. I hadn't been in like 6 months.
That's blasphemous, first of all. What are you doing?
Well, I had a child.
I mean, it was taking child, up a lot of my your time. Child still has to eat. Can't start them too early on Chipotle. Infants can eat Chipotle, right? They got a new high protein menu, Ben. They've got a new salsa out, new
the quesadilla, yeah.
Yeah, come on.
Babies
now.
Like quesadillas?
It is a scam that those points expire. I didn't know I that did not. Because I basically just convert them into free food as soon as I can. As soon as I get to the entree, I should clarify. My wife one time tried to redeem. I think she actually did redeem. She redeemed the points for like either guac or a side of queso. And I was like, what are you doing?
That's like getting the, when you get hotel points and use them for like stuff or like a, you yeah, get like a like TV.
What on earth are we
whatever.
Possibly doing? Like, you're yeah, not get the pillows, the hotel pillows that you can get. That's ridiculous. But yeah, no, otherwise I'm good. We're steadily working on our next draft update. That's going to be coming out on the site next week. So got to finish writing all the new reports and finish finalizing that list. I know you've been busy on the high school side, looking into a lot of sleepers for the class, getting our state lists ready to roll. What else, though? What else you've been focused on thinking about?
I like this time of year because I think we have like a, not small sample anymore, it's medium sample maybe, mm-hmm, for these 2025 draft picks. You get a little bit better feeling on which way some of these guys are trending. You get some guys that look phenomenal, some guys where you're like, uh-oh, this, and I'm sure the teams that are drafting these guys are thinking some of the same things, mm-hmm, good and bad. When you see a guy in low A that you just drafted who's got a 40% strikeout rate as a hitter, I should say, it's right, alarming. But there's definitely some guys jumping out where I think we're pretty excited about them so far.
Yeah, I feel like a number of players from that class are off to really strong performances. The pitching, it feels like every pitcher at the top of last year's draft is really doing a nice job. And it kind of makes me look at this year's class and like really wonder what we're going to be dealing with for, especially the college arms who move quickly. Like that's just a demographic that people like. But it seems like Kate Anderson's pitching well. Jamie Arnold's pitching well. Tyler Brenner's been pitching well.
Not so much Liam Doyle, but...
Well, not everyone. I didn't say every single pitcher, but there's just a big cluster of names that have performed. And Seth Hernandez, still pretty good, it seems.
Seth Hernandez looks phenomenal, man. I mean, he's our highest ranked 2025 draft pick on our top 100 right now. I mean, it's not Eli Willits who went number one overall. It's not Kate Anderson. It's Seth Hernandez. And if you take away every pitching prospect ahead of him who already has big league time, so like, you know, Trey Savage and Peyton Tolley, the only other pitcher we have ahead of him on our top 100 is Thomas White, the Marlins lefty, who's already in AAA. Yeah, absolutely everything about Seth Hernandez just looks phenomenal. 6'4", athletic, throwing a ton of strikes. he's striking out 53% of the batters that he's faced, and every pitch looks outstanding. It's a fastball sitting upper 90s. He's touching 101. Changeup is plus-plus, which is one of the best changeups anywhere. In baseball, it's 14 miles an hour off his fastball. He throws it for strikes. It's got a ton of wiggle and movement on it. The slider and curveball, those pitches both have miss rates over 70%. That's going to come down because it's, you know, as we get larger samples and he starts facing better hitters. But those are good pitches too.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure we're going to like get this transformation of opinions on Seth Hernandez now because he's no longer a high school right-handed pitcher and he's just a professional pitching prospect and he's going to be compared just straight up to everyone else who's in affiliated baseball. But like everything you just mentioned is why we were so high on him, Baseball America, why he was the number two ranked player in the class. It's why I was like really bullish on a team like stepping outside and taking a shot on the risk and really considering him for the first overall pick. I mean, he had the best assortment of stuff and size and just like athleticism on the mound as a high schooler. Like all those college pitchers that I kind of mentioned, who we'll get into a few of them later on in the show, they're good pitching prospects, but none of them have this combination of impact stuff and command that I think Seth has. And quite frankly, he looks too good for low A right now. I'll be really curious how long stays at that level. But like you said, I mean, he's struck out more than half of the batters he's faced. He struck out 23 of the 43 batters he's faced. He's sitting 98 miles an hour. He's been up to 101. We've seen him up to 102 miles per hour. I mean, he should be a quick mover for a high school pitcher. I mean, he's expanded just in terms of like working deeper into games. Start after start, they're unsurprisingly being pretty cautious with how they're using him. It was 3 innings, 4 innings, 5 innings. He hasn't thrown more than 68 pitches. But yeah, it's been absolutely electric, and we're getting like glimpses of another front of the rotation arm in this Pirates system. So, I'm glad that the breaking balls with Seth are effective and have been good, because that was, I guess, there are a few things that people continued to question with Hernandez outside of just being a high school righty. Like there were some critiques of like the fastball movement that he had. And then there were like the questions about, oh, do you really want a fastball changeup oriented right-hander? We don't love those profiles. And I think you as well, I won't speak for you, but I always felt like both his slider and curveball kind of got just underrated because the changeup was so obviously a 70. And just because those weren't 70s at the time didn't mean they were bad. But he did everything you wanted to see from an amateur pitcher in spinning two distinct breaking balls with high spin rates and good power and good feel, to make me feel comfortable that he would find a quality breaking ball. And it's nice when things work out. So I'm just like knocking on wood over here and hoping he stays healthy, because I guess that's the concern with all pitchers that could strike at any moment.
He looks like a number one starter in the making. Whatever boxes that you're looking for as a 19-year-old starting pitcher to be able to check, Seth Hernandez does it. It's stuff, power, diversity of repertoire, pitchability, polish. I'm with you. I don't think he's going to need much time in low A. And I would be at this point surprised if he doesn't finish the year in double A, which is going to put him in position for a 2027 major league debut.
Yeah.
I was just, you know, projecting 2 years down the road, like where he's going to be. I don't know for certain, but like, he just seems like one of these players who is, the stuff and the pitchability are so good where whatever your like typical timetable is for a high school pitcher, he feels like a college pitcher almost. Like you can move him like that if you wanted to. He's clear, like the low A hitters are, I'm not saying the Pirates made a mistake assigning him to low A, right? It's a high school guy, first year out, send him there. Like it's, you know, Florida, you want to send him somewhere warm too. I get it. But I also don't think the Pirates are going to be keeping him there that long. I'm sure they're seeing what everybody else is seeing, which is that he needs another challenge already.
Right. Yeah, I have just like strike specific numbers through the first two on hand. And he's throwing everything for strikes at a 72% rate. I guess we have
that's crazy. That's super high,
right? Like all the secondaries he's landing. I actually have the I can do the numbers here. Baseball Reference has strikes in total pitches for all three of his first outings. But yeah, it's just insane. I mean, truthfully, I don't think this is crazy to say. Maybe you'll think it's crazy to say, but if I'm taking pitching prospects and I can just pluck any current prospect eligible pitching prospect in the game, I don't know that I'm taking anyone over Seth Hernandez. I think right now I would take him over any pitching prospect in baseball. I've seen enough, Ben. Three starts in pro ball.
I think I'm still riding with Thomas White for right now, only because he's in triple.
He's left-handed. I understand it. Yeah, I'm not.
He throws 100 miles an hour. He's got a great fastball, great changeup, great slider. Seth Hernandez maybe tighter command, at least at the same age.
Absolutely tighter command. I think maybe even now. always been my lingering question with Thomas White. And again, I think Thomas White doesn't necessarily need to have Seth Hernandez command to be a potential front of the rotation arm. But like, this is why I'm so enamored with Seth Hernandez, because he just does everything. You know, like the fact that he's throwing the strikes he's throwing now at his age with this stuff is just an insane combination. Yeah.
What about those early college arms we talked about, or you mentioned earlier, and Cade Anderson and Jamie Arnold in particular,
mm-hmm,
have been awesome. And both guys going right to double A in their first assignments out of college. I mean, Cade Anderson, this is just what the Mariners were hoping to see when they drafted him second overall last year. It's strikes at a high clip with everything he throws. He's consistently getting ahead of hitters, and then they're just up there guessing because they've only got him throwing 37% fastballs this year. So he's got a nasty curveball, a sharp slider. The changeup, too, has been pretty effective so far this year.
Mm-hmm.
He looks like a young Max Fried right now. I mean, I think that's the potential outcome for Cade Anderson, where he ends up being that, you know, we're going to call it number one or number two, probably more number two, but front end, at least, of the rotation type guy. And just given how polished he is and already being in double A, I wouldn't rule out seeing him pitching in Seattle this year.
Yeah, no, he's been really good as well. Again, similar kind of overall strike rate with his, through his first, what is it, three games, north of 70% overall strikes, just his feel to land. All those secondaries are super impressive. I'm really encouraged to see how frequently he's throwing the curveball in addition to the slider. I think I mentioned it a few podcasts ago. That was a breaking ball that I was kind of curious to see like how it was going to play in the pro ranks. I think the Max Fried comp that he'd gotten pre-draft continues to look pretty good. And the curveball being a real piece to his arsenal is a nice addition to that. The changeup has maybe been better than I expected it to be, at least in the early going right now. Just not like a pitch that he really needed all that much at the amateur level, but obviously for a left-handed pitcher to have a really quality, reliable changeup that he's confident in throwing, also throwing that pitch for strikes at a high level, getting a lot of misses with that pitch. Yeah, it's been super encouraging to see from him. Another guy, I think probably one of on a short list of players you expect to be among the quicker movers in the class. And then Jamie Arnold kind of doing a lot of the same things here. He's got four starts already under his belt in double A, 2.55 ERA, 27 strikeouts, six walks. What would you say is like the gap between Arnold and Anderson? If you have a gap there,
I think Anderson has a little bit of a deeper repertoire, but yeah, I mean, I really like both these guys, and to get him for the A's at picking at 11th overall for a guy coming into that year.
Top pitcher in the class, yeah.
Top pitcher, potentially number one, certainly in that mix for like being a top three overall pick. I mean, if the Angels had picked him second overall, I don't think any of us would have been like, oh, wow, what are they thinking? We're so surprised by this. They took Bremner, who's been pretty good, too, in high A. But yeah, he's been really good. And when he throws that nasty sweeper, he just gets some of the dumbest looking swings from hitters. Like
he does.
It looks like they're hitting on skates because they're getting ready to hit a pitch that they think is going to be a fastball. And then they're trying to adjust and they realize they're wrong and they're trying to recalculate where they need to be swinging and they're just missing by about a foot and a half. So he just gets these extremely discombobulated looking swings. Yeah, he's been great. I mean, 27-6 strikeout to walk in 17 2/3 innings. And he's just not really using anything beyond the fastball sweeper other than a, you know, a very rare changeup, but he doesn't, I don't think he really needs to. I'd love to see him develop a better changeup, but I also think the way he pitches right now is going to continue to be effective to be a mid rotation starter. And maybe more.
Yeah. I think both Jamie Arnold and both Cade Anderson seem like pretty, I don't know if I'd say safe. I mean, yeah, I would say safe, like relative to a typical prospect, they seem like safe middle of the rotation sort of arms for me. I do think maybe the difference between Anderson and Arnold right now is just the confidence in the overall depth of the arsenal that you mentioned. I quite like the shape of Jamie Arnold's changeup, really ever since we've seen him tinkering with that pitch in college. He gets an absurd amount of movement, but he still doesn't seem to fully trust it. I would like to see him use that pitch more. I think this is like kind of the exact environment you want to be using that pitch more frequently, because while yes, everyone wants to win the games, it's not like he is in college and he has to be using his best two pitches to put his team in a position to win, because you need to win every time out. Like, this is the time for him to really, I would hope, be aggressive in dialing up that changeup usage, because I think purely off of like the movement he's able to generate from that really low slot, I think it could be a real weapon. And I do think that as he continues to face more talented right-handed hitters, it might be a piece that he's going to need more frequently. I don't think that like his sweeper is a pitch that won't be effective against righties, but I just think that given his pitch mix, that's definitely an area that I'd want to see him continue to improve moving forward, because I just think there is a good changeup in here. And in the minor leagues is where I would like to have him throwing that a little bit more often. In his first two starts, it looks like he threw just like six. I don't know if he threw or I don't know if he threw more in his last two, but at least early on, not throwing it a ton.
Would you rather have Arnold or Tyler Bremner right now?
Man, I don't know if I ever had a great answer for that question pre-draft, and I don't know that I have a great answer now.
Bremner sub one ERA, 20-4 strikeout to walk in 11 2/3 innings. He's in high A, but also another guy where, I mean, come on, Angels, what are you guys are supposed to be the team that's pushing your prospects, and you got Tyler Bremner sitting around in in high A. All these guys are in double A. What's going on? Yeah,
I feel like Tyler Bremner always kind of got a bad rap last year. Was better than people gave him credit for, was less of a surprise at number two than people tried to imagine that he was. I mean, he entered the year neck and neck with Jamie Arnold for top college pitcher in the class. His track record of performance was exceptional. The strikes with Bremner, in terms of his overall strike rate, maybe haven't been quite as good as I would have expected to see. I don't know that if you just look at the walk rate, you would notice that. I'll be curious to see like what that turns into moving forward. And again, like another player that I have a lot of confidence in the changeup. Nice to see the results he's getting with the slider so far, because I know that was a, I don't think you could have the same amount of confidence in Tyler Bremner's breaking ball that you maybe could with a Cade Anderson or with a Jamie Arnold. Like there were stints in college where that pitch would just get hit pretty hard.
That's where I would have Arnold ahead right now. I have a lot more confidence in his slider compared to Bremner. It's been effective so far against high A hitters.
Right.
I think it'll still be like a solid pitch, but I don't see the kind of plus to maybe plus breaking ball that Jamie Arnold has.
I probably would tend to agree with you there. I guess breaking ball versus changeup considerations, comparing and contrasting Bremner and Arnold will maybe be interesting as we move forward. With those two, but yeah, they've all been pretty good. And I think like looking back to last year's draft, you kind of had the idea that one of these pitchers was going to fall. There were just so many college arms that were getting talked about in the top 10. And when, at least when I was trying to do the mock drafts down the stretch, there would always be one or two arms that I just couldn't force inside the top 10. Like someone was falling out and getting into the teens. And the A's have just seemed like for a few years now, they've been kind of happy to take guys on the board who fall to them. They just like, don't get cute. At least take the top players on our board. Maybe our boards have been just kind of lined up with the A's in the past few years. But yeah, I really like what they've done. It feels like they've gotten a potential top five sort of talent in the class to fall to them with Jamie Arnold. But yeah, I think the top of the group's looking pretty good.
They pick 8th overall this year?
Yes, that is correct.
Would you put Jackson Flora for this year? I mean, he's the top pitcher in this year's draft. Would you put him in the same bucket of players as Arnold and Anderson and Bremner?
I think he'd probably be in that group. Like he wouldn't be at the top of that group for me, I don't think. But I don't know that he wouldn't belong there.
Seem like there's another college arm this year that would.
No, we should be getting Cameron Flukie this weekend. I'm hoping to see his first start since week one. And if he is kind of the same Cameron Flukie, I think he would immediately jump into that sort of range. And even at 8 for the A's would be a really interesting option if they want to grab another college pitcher, which it sounds like they might have a desire to do that.
Do you think Flora could potentially be there at 8, or that's too...
Well,
that's too steep for...
Never say never, but I did have a conversation with some people literally this week where someone was like, yeah, even if Jackson Flora got hurt right now, I would be stunned if he got closer to that range. So it sounds like he's kind of established himself and it'd be really hard to envision him falling.
Yeah, you'd have to have like a Treya Savage type situation maybe.
Some like really dicey medical or just questions, or if he got hurt near the end of the year, maybe that would force it. But again, like I said, someone literally told me if he got hurt, like they still think he would go in that range. I think the difference now is like, whereas a year ago, there was kind of like a pick your flavor of college pitching profiles. And there were a lot of guys who were going out performing that you could really fall in love with or be attracted to at the top of the draft. This year, it's just Flora. Like, I don't know if there's a single other college pitcher who's healthy right now that you would say is definitely a top 10 talent. If Flukie comes back, he jumps into that group and becomes the second. But yeah, Flora is like the only pitcher who's talked about in like the top tier in this year's draft. And so because of that, I just think for the demand that teams have for that profile and just the scarcity, it's really hard to envision him slipping down to where they're picking right now.
Do you think some teams might look at how good Seth Hernandez looks right now, even relative to not just some of the other pitchers, but some of the hitters who did go to the top of the draft, who, you know, have mixed results right now in some cases, and might think, yeah, why don't we take high school pitching earlier? Why don't we draft Coleman Borthwick or a Gio Rojas earlier, or a Joseph Contreras or Caden Wachter, or maybe Brody Bamilla or whoever it is? Mm-hmm. Or is just Seth Hernandez like, okay, this guy is just a different cat than everybody else,
and yeah,
teams are still understandably averse.
I hope it is some of both. Like, I don't think there's a high school pitcher in this class that's as good as Seth Hernandez. For all the praise that the high school pitching demographic gets in this class, and rightfully so, I think that Seth Hernandez would still be clearly the top high school arm if he was in this year's class. I think even if we hadn't seen Seth Hernandez pitch in Pro Bowl yet, I think I would say that pretty confidently. I do hope that teams are just more willing to take high school pitchers in the first round, particularly in a draft like this one might be shaping up to be, where it's like, hey, the talent is just not in the demographic that you would prefer. So just take the talent that is there. There's just this hesitance for high school pitching that I can understand the rationale and the logic of, but I just really would like to see some more teams be more aggressive here and take a chance on some upside and trust their player development groups to just coax more out of them, because this high school pitching group is really good. And once you get into the range where you're talking about guys like Coleman Borthwick, Jensen Hirschkorn, Logan Schmidt versus these college hitting profiles that really have a lot of warts, It'd be easy to just say, oh, we're going to go with the college hitting profile because they're safer. But like, are they the best prospects? I don't know. I'm not entirely sure. We do seem to be getting more up arrow feedback on high school pitchers at this stage in the calendar, which is very rare. So maybe that's a sign that teams are going to just take these profiles because it's the strength of the class. Because typically this time of year, we're not pushing high school arms up the board. The college hitters are moving up the board and displacing them. That's not happening this year. And maybe that's kind of a sign of what's going to happen in the draft. I hope so.
Yeah, I think it makes sense to have general preferences of like, okay, in a typical year, we would lean toward bats, college pitchers, whatever. But like you said last year, when you were saying Seth Hernandez was probably the guy you would take number one overall, if you had that pick, like it just depends on how the talent is distributed
right
in that year. Like it's not.
Yeah, like I would love a Rock Chulowski, but you don't get a Rock Chulowski every year. You don't get an Adley Rutschman. You don't get a Bobby Witt Jr. every year. So yeah, I think it would be nice if teams operated a little bit more fluidly, or at least I would like to see it more, because I just think that you can gain so much by getting an elite arm talent and putting them right into your pro development system and seeing what you can do. But we'll see, I suppose. There are a few hitters that have performed well from last year's class as well. Anyone who jumps out at you?
JoJo Parker with the Blue Jays looks excellent right
yeah.
now.
He looks super strong right now too.
Yeah, he just looks the way you want a young left-handed hitter to look like. It's rhythm, balance, compact swing, good path through the zone, adjustability. He's consistently on time. The barrel is just like a magnet for the baseball. He can use the whole field. He'll square up premium velo. He's got the strength that you're talking about to drive the ball with some impact. I would still say it's more hitting ability that stands out more than just the raw power, but it's a good mix of mm-hmm. hitting ability and power and good strike zone judgment to get on base at a high clip. I think defensively, long term, you're probably looking at a third baseman, and the way that I expect him to hit and the way he's hitting right now, that's a potential above average regular third base.
Yeah, this is why we were like so high on JoJo Parker, even with some acknowledgement that he might slide off of shortstop. And I would say, just given especially how the lower half looks early this year, he looks quite a bit more physical than I remember him looking in high school. He's clearly added some weight since signing and getting into pro ball. And I'm perfectly okay with that, because ultimately why I like JoJo Parker is because I think he can be an exceptionally advanced pure hitter who also packs a punch offensively. I mean, how many times a year ago do we say JoJo Parker might have the best hit power combination in the class? Maybe we, like I said, preface with high school class, but like he did have one of the more intriguing hit power combinations.
Yeah.
And seeing that early this year has been fun to see. Like, he seems unfazed by pro pitching, which is not always the case with young hitters, but it seems to be the case for him.
Yeah, he's been really good. The Diamondbacks first round pick, Cason Cunningham, high school shortstop they took. I mean, he looks exactly like what I'm sure the Diamondbacks were hoping for when they drafted Cason Cunningham. It's short, tight, left-handed swing, great plate coverage, minimal swing and miss, and just the back control, the maneuverability to put the ball in play at a really high rate against any kind of pitch. So, you know, you're seeing him hit 364 with a 485 OBP through 68 plate appearances with more walks and strikeouts. But also, like, the difference between him and Parker is there's not much power, right? At least not right now. He's a smaller guy. It's not huge bat speed. So he's hitting 364, but he's slugging 436 with mm-hmm. three extra base hits, no home runs. But the barrel accuracy is great. It's hard to teach that. It's a great foundation to start from. It's just really short, really quick. I don't know that he's ever going to grow into a ton of power, but I also don't think he necessarily has to mm-hmm. in order for him to be an everyday big leaguer, you know, somewhere in the infield, whether it's shortstop or second base.
Yeah, I'd say his performance this year is encouraging to me, because I did have some concern after a brief pro debut. Like, he was making a lot of contact in his pro debut, but the performance wasn't maybe what you were hoping for a player who is as tied to his hit tool as he is to provide value. Like if he's not hitting,
probably like for the first time in his life.
Exactly. Dominating everybody. I feel like it's easy to get a little squealy, a little squirmy if a guy like that is not hitting, just because again, like so much of like his value depends on having these elite contact skills, hitting for a high average, getting on base. The strikeout to walk was more concerning than I expected it to be for him in his pro debut. That is less of a question now. He's walking a lot. He's cut the strikeout rate. He's making even more contact. If you're just looking at swinging strike rate right now, it's a 6.5% swinging strike rate, which is well above average for just a hitter in general. And that's what you want to see for a player like this. He's spraying a lot of the balls to the opposite field. I think he's always had a pretty good ability to use the entire field, go the other way. And if he's going to be a guy who's just hitting the ball on the line into the gaps and slapping it the other way, I think that's an approach that can work for him. I am going to be curious to see, like, I guess more defensive profile questions and answers as we move forward into the season than power, because I think, like you, I never had huge expectations for what that power was going to be, and still like the offensive profile, even if that's always going to be a question or a limitation in his game. But seeing him hit 364 in low A in his first pro season so far is definitely good to see.
He's been good. Josh Hammond, the Royals, shortstop, high school shortstop. He's looked really good too. There's some Caleb Bonimer in there, I think, with Josh Hammond. If you're a Royals, like if you're a Royals fan, you don't know Caleb Bonimer. He's the number 23 prospect in baseball, who's currently riding a 1100 OPS in high A as a 20-year-old shortstop, third baseman. And Hammond's in low A. He's hitting 355, 420, 597, 69 plate appearances. It's that same kind of profile. It's a right-handed power hitting shortstop slash third baseman who's a very pull heavy hitter, but with a knack for just smashing baseballs in the air to his pull side and performing really well right now.
Yeah, I was only a little interested in that comp because I feel like there's a lot more rhythm in Josh Hammond's swing, like from the actual mechanics of the swing, they're different. But I think the overall profile of a player you can get to is actually pretty good comp there. I think Josh Hammond's power is really impressive. He's already been getting to it a little bit in pro ball. He's a great athlete. I'm not sure where you're at on whether he's going to play shortstop, whether he's going to play third base, but wherever he plays defensively, he has a cannon. It was only a few years ago where we were probably both thinking about him as one of the better just straight up pitching prospects.
Got a great breaking ball too
in his class. Yeah, really really vicious breaking ball. And so at this point, it feels like pitching will maybe just be a fun backup, fallback option if the hitting doesn't work out. But I think it's nice to see the performance for him. I mean, how concerned are you with swing and miss or strikeout rate tendencies with him? So far, he's struck out 17 times and walked 7 times in his first 69 plate appearances. That's like a 24-25% strikeout rate. I think he's probably the hitter that's always going to have some swing and miss in his game. He's not the sort of elite contact guy that Kasen Cunningham is. I don't think he'll be the pure hitter that JoJo Parker is. But I guess what sort of average or strikeout rates do you envision a guy like Hammond having?
I think what he's running now, probably. I'm curious just to like see bigger sample. And then obviously once he starts facing more pitching, like, you know, guys who are very pull heavy the way he is can leave themselves vulnerable sometimes to more holes. So it probably ends up being like more a higher power grade than pure hit grade. But I don't think it's just like all like raw power that's not going to show up in games because he's hitting, you know, a 180 or something like that. I think there's like a nice, maybe not balance of hitting ability and power, but there's power with the ability to tap into that power in games.
Mm-hmm. Okay. What about some college names here, or at least Orioles outfielder, first baseman Ike Irish, a player who, I don't know about you, but I was surprised that he fell as far as he did in the draft. Now he fell to a team that had a lot of bonus pool money, but still, you don't typically tend to see the top college hitters in any class slide to the degree that Ike Irish did. I thought it would have been more likely for him to go inside the first 10 picks than to fall to the range that he did on draft day. maybe a little bit bummed that the catching experiment already seems to be like a non-factor for Irish. He's not caught at all this year. He's played mostly first. He split some time at left field and right field. But he is hitting, and his hit power OBP combination, again, kind of like JoJo Parker, maybe the college variant of that, was near the top of the class a year ago. We had a lot of confidence in just him being a valuable offensive player. He's off to a good start as well.
Yeah, it's good to see, because when he got into pro ball last year, kind of stunk. Like, at least the slash line was not very good. I mean, he hit 230, 296, 297 over 20 games in low A, which is not what you would expect for a guy where you're drafting him, banking on being a polished, fast-moving college bat. But the way he's looked this year is like, okay, that's all right. That's more in line with what we were expecting from him coming out of Auburn, where he had close to a 1,200 OPS in the SEC. Yeah, everything looks right now. So I don't imagine he's going to need a ton of time in high A.
Yeah, he's hitting 326, 446, 522. He's got three doubles, a pair of homers. And he's walking just about as much as he's striking out, which that maybe more than anything was kind of a little surprising to me in his pro debut. The strikeout to walk rate was a lot more out of shape than I expected it to be. Really good marks so far through his first 13 games. And again, another player that I would imagine you could probably push reasonably quickly with the performance that he's had. So good to see that. And you know, any other draftees you want to mention, or you want to get into some other names?
Yeah, we can work in some other non-draft picks.
Okay, well, we did have a question about one player that you've long been excited about, so maybe I'll throw you a question from Alex on Twitter, who asked about Franklin Arias. What's his ceiling? Yes, he's off to a great start. Is he going to be a future piece for Boston, or should they trade him? Teams tend to hang on to their prospects rather than sell high on them, e.g. Christian Campbell. Granted, not all growth is linear. So that's a comment from Alex. Ben, if you want to take that on.
I would definitely be trying to trade for Franklin Arias if I was another team, but I think the price is probably shot up already. If I'm the Red Sox, I'm viewing him as our shortstop of the future. I'm going to convince the rest of the staff to come around to my thinking that Franklin Arias is an easy top 25 prospect in baseball. Mm-hmm. And at some point soon, he might be pushed into a top 15, top 10 prospect in the game. He's a 20-year-old shortstop in Double A who plays great defense. And offensively, he's always had outstanding hand-eye coordination with great bat control, so he doesn't strike out much. The swing works really well. And now he's hitting not a huge sample size. It's 49 plate appearances. But he's hitting 450, 531, 900 with not just more walks than strikeouts. He's got five walks and four strikeouts. He has more home runs than strikeouts because he's already got five home runs. After
which is
he
a
hit,
shocking amount for him.
He hit eight last year in a full season. I said last year I thought he was the best prospect in the Red Sox farm system ahead of Peyton Tolley and Connelly Early, who I also really like. And I said if he doesn't hit for more than below average power, he's still potentially a plus regular at shortstop when you look at just what he does with the bat and with his defense at a premium position. And I said, look, last year he was 19 years old, and Mookie Betts, when he was 19 years old, he hit zero home runs his entire year in the short season New York Penn League. Not saying Franklin Arias is going to Cooperstown the way Mookie Betts is, but just that it would not surprise me if at some point we saw a power spike from Franklin Arias and he ended up turning in some five WAR seasons in the big leagues. And right now I feel even more confident that Franklin Arias is trending toward that direction of a potential all-star shortstop for the Red Sox.
Yeah, what gave you the most optimism that he would come into more power? Was there something about just how he looked physically? Was it the bat speed? Was it just like players who've looked like this in the past? Was it your confidence in his pure hitting ability that just when he got a little bit stronger and older, he would come into that? Because you were always super bullish on him, and you're looking spot on, Ben. So I'm happy to come along with you and get onto the Franklin Arias bandwagon a little late, but also like nothing you said I can argue with. He's doing it, like the power jump seems real. It looks like he's about to have the best offensive year of his career on top of what he does defensively. It's hard not to like that package.
Yeah, I wouldn't say like I knew or I had a ton of confidence that this type of power, and we'll see like what happens the rest of the season, that it would definitely come. It was more, okay, even if it doesn't, this guy's still going to be a really valuable player. And if you just look back historically, there's a lot of guys who, when they were, you know, 19, 20 years old and just, you know, young, lean guys like Franklin Arias is, who have just a knack for finding the sweet spot, hitting the barrel pretty consistently, coming into more power as they get stronger, as they learn which pitches to try to attack more and drive and catch a little bit more out front and do some damage with, just coming into more power than you would think that that they might. Mm-hmm. You know, obviously like Alex Bregman is like, you know, an often cited case of that, or like Jose Ramirez, who's a very different body type than Franklin Arias. Like Michael Brantley's a lot of, like Eugenio Suarez. I remember when he was in rookie ball, or even when he signed, was like 100 and like almost nothing pounds. Here he's out hitting close to 50 home runs. Still, like, you know, I don't think anybody, including the Tigers who signed him, were expecting that. So, I just thought he was going to be a very good player even without the power. But now that we're starting to see it come around, I'm even more excited.
Yeah, no, he looks really good. So well done on that one. Okay, any other guys who are impressing you? There's a player I want to talk about that is struggling, but maybe we can bury the sad stuff for a little later if there's some other guys who you've been impressed by.
I like what I've seen from Josh Adamczewski so far with the Brewers. Just like a really good hitter, man. He's in high A right now. It's 314, 478, 771 in 46 plate appearances, more walks and strikeouts, 5 home runs already. Just he's playing a little bit of second base, but like barely. He's not very good defensively. So he's mostly been playing left field, which is not a huge surprise because he just wasn't very good defensively at second base. The Brewers have Bryce Terang there. They just signed Cooper Pratt long term. Yep. Oh, by the way, Jesus Made is probably going to be the number one prospect.
Yeah, need to find a new position for him. Yeah,
pretty soon. Like Luis Pena looks really good too. He even made a nice defensive play the other night. So, not that the Brewers outfield is all that easy to crack right now.
Right. Either. I was just wondering if he's like an ideal trade candidate, if this is a situation where you're the Brewers, like one of your big league pieces is probably going to be on the move soon because you got this young, controllable prospect. That seems to be a move that they maybe would be more inclined to make. But their system is just overflowing with players who understand how to work in AB, how to get on base at a high clip. I think they still have the highest contact rate in baseball at the major league level. It wouldn't shock me at all if their like minor league hitting contact rate was a top mark as well. I'll double check that just now. But
Luis Lara's coming pretty soon in center field. If the Brewers, you know, not that they're often trading away prospects, but if there is a deal that they want to make, Josh Adamczewski will have quite a bit of value from other teams because they're seeing the same things that you know that we're seeing. It's a very smooth, easy, compact left-handed swing, just a lot of hitter-ish tendencies. That word comes up a lot with him.
Yeah,
I mean that I use a lot, I guess, but just a good hitter. It does kind of diminish the profile somewhat going to the outfield, but it's like I still think he can be like an average or better regular even in left field. It's just a really good hitter, and there's some power in there too. Got slowed down a little bit at the end, obviously, last year by some injuries, but I think like Andrew Fisher maybe was a bigger name or just like buzzier name coming into the year because of what he did at the WBC and then some mm-hmm. spring breakout stuff, but you know, different positions obviously, but I would still take Adam Chesky ahead of him, and I think Adam Chesky is going to make a case to be coming into our top 100 at some point this season.
Yeah, so the Brewers are picking 25th overall this year. They're definitely a team that it feels like they almost always do a bat early.
Yes.
I would be really interested in them pivoting off that because they have so many good hitters in their system, and I feel like the strength of the draft at their pick is almost certainly going to be high school pitchers who teams have passed on. I don't expect it to happen or think it will, but I would really love to see them take a shot on one of these high upside arms.
I don't think so either. I also wouldn't be like, what about them and like Liam Peterson, right? Mm. Like just their pitching development.
Yeah.
Take Liam Peterson. I mean, they have a history obviously with like later picks, but I'm thinking of like Tyson Harden, right? Where it's mm-hmm. like, okay, this guy has, you know, good stuff and like bad results mm-hmm. at Mississippi State.
And they probably came into the year not expecting to really get a shot at Liam Peterson. And I think all the teams in the 20s are kind of, I don't know if I'd say scrambling, but like there's a decent chance that he'll be available for them just given his inability to throw strikes consistently and like lock himself into the top tier of college arms. And so I do think you're going to be sitting there with like a lot of upside from guys like him, maybe guys like Tegan Coons, and that whole high school pitching group, guys like Cole Carlone, yeah. maybe another pitcher with some reliever question marks, maybe not a typical college first round pitching prospect, but in terms of talent and upside, like sounds like he could be in their mixer in front of them at this stage. Yeah. I wouldn't bet on it again, but I think that would be a fun one.
Yeah, a different animal Peterson is than Jacob Mizorowski. And Mizorowski mm-hmm. wasn't their first-round pick. Although they paid him more than their first-round pick. They probably want to forget from that year. But yeah, I think there would just be a fun pairing. You're right.
I pulled up the zone contact leaders in Major League Baseball this year. You want to guess what teams are at the top of that leaderboard? So these are just the teams that are best at making contact within the strike zone. I feel like four of the five teams I maybe would have guessed within like six or seven picks. There's one that was a little surprising. I don't know if it should have been surprising to me. But I would say four of the five are kind of usual suspects and teams you would think of together in terms of like draft preferences and just player preferences.
Probably Brewers.
They are third on this list, D-backs. 87.9. D-backs are fourth, 87.8.
I don't know if Guardians would be there now.
They're not there. They're eighth. So. They would be one of the teams I would have guessed and been wrong on.
Blue Jays?
The Blue Jays are fifth. So you've got three through five. Blue Jays have an 87.7% zone contact. So you got one and two that you haven't guessed yet. One, I think you can get. Two, I don't know that you would get with five more picks. So if you just think about Milwaukee, Arizona, Toronto, Cleveland, there's probably another order or two that you'd think of that have similar sort of traits they seem to select for.
Does Mets sound stupid? I know they've been terrible, but they're not like a huge swing and miss team.
They're 11th. They're not in this group, but no, okay. they're not like terrible. I would say maybe
in that regard, yes.
Maybe think market size. Similar market size to the other teams you mentioned.
I was smaller. Marlins?
Not Marlins. They're seventh, though. Top 10. You're in the right geographic area.
Oh, Tampa?
Yeah, Tampa's number one.
Okay.
And I'll probably just give you the second one unless you want another shot at it, but I don't think you'd guess this team.
I don't think this is super compelling audio, so why don't you just...
Washington Nationals, 88.1% zone contact. Yeah, they would not have been... I mean, they've been good so far, offensively, at least. Probably need some pitching, but yeah. And hey, I think there are probably a lot of people at home listening trying to guess these teams alongside you, Ben, so don't knock the audio there.
I think they just don't want to listen to me try to guess.
Okay, fair enough. We can keep it moving then.
Yeah. Who are you? So who are you so concerned about that you were?
Well, I am a little bit concerned with Bryce Rayner. And I think that Bryce Rayner kind of, I don't think that we ever wrote this. I would have been a little annoyed if we had written it. But I think Bryce Rayner got tied into this hitterish left-handed high school hitter tag that I don't necessarily think his skill set warranted, because just the Tigers took him and the Tigers had taken a lot of hitterish high school left-handed hitters. I think Bryce Rayner was always more power over hit, at least for me.
For sure.
And he was always in the same kind of Connor Griffin bucket of like big tools, kind of suspect hit tool, or at least questionable swing and miss for Rayner. And then we saw some like video of his swing early this spring. And I feel like he has one of the most aggressive hitch moves I can remember seeing for a player. Like he kind of always had this, but it feels more extreme now than it did when he was in high school. And he is definitely on the struggle bus in terms of contact, and also got promoted despite that. I mean, through his first 11 games in low A, he had struck out 20 times and walked 6 times. That's a 40.8% strikeout rate. Then he gets promoted to high A. He's played just one game so far, but in his first game, he went 0-for-4 with 3 punch outs. I'm very concerned about just how the swing looks and the missed tendencies we're seeing from Bryce Rayner. Are you going to like back me off the cliff here, or do you share some of those concerns?
I think Bryce Rayner is a good prospect, and I did like him coming into the year, but I think you were probably on the same page as me, but I was definitely on the lower end of the staff with where I thought he belonged in the top 100 coming into the year. Yeah. Again, I think top 100 guy, at least starting the season. But he does have huge left-handed power, and he fits somewhere on the left side of the infield. I think more likely third base. Plenty of arm strength either spot on the left side. But he only played 35 games last year, you know, right shoulder injury. And there was a swing and miss that came with the power that I thought might get exposed more as he moved up, because there's some things that he did with his swing between a big leg kick and just the way his back foot would slide out from underneath him that added more margin for error, especially given some of the issues that he had against spin last year. And right now I am definitely more worried. I started getting more worried too in spring training when I saw that swing, because now that we've gotten more games and it's almost all in low A as a 2024 high school guy, to have a 43% K rate, It's the swing has just gotten a lot hitchier. That's what worried me, and it's still there, and I don't know why, because he didn't swing like that last year. So I guess the steel man case for him would be saying, okay, well, he can get back to the way his swing worked a year ago. That could help resolve issues, but that's not how he's swinging the bat right now. And you still have the lower half stuff that creates some more balance and timing issues. So, yeah, I am worried.
Yeah, and he's also like a very passive hitter right now. I mean, maybe he's always been a bit of a passive hitter. I remember watching him in high school and wishing he would pull the trigger a little bit more frequently in hitters counts, and he's just happy to take his walks. I do think there is some sort of on-base value that he might naturally get to because of that. But I also don't know if it's the sort of selectivity that comes from elite swing decisions. I think it's the selectivity and the chase rates and the OBP that you'll get, just because he could probably go up there and not swing against pitchers in the low minors who just can't throw strikes. And when he's facing pitchers who are more capable of attacking him in zone early and not just letting him get a free pass, I think that's going to be an issue for him. I mean, right now he's swinging like less than a third of the time, I believe. The swinging strikeout rate is very concerning. You mentioned breaking balls in particular with him a year ago. Yeah, I would say that I just have a lot of kind of red flags with Bryce Rayner right now. And I hope we can see some tweaks, whether it's mechanically or approach-wise or ideally both. But I think there's just like a lot of questions about whether or not he's going to get to the impressive power that he does have. Because he can hit the ball incredibly hard. He's really strong. I think he's going to get even bigger moving forward. But I'm concerned here.
Yeah. Kevin McGonigal is also second in the American League in WAR. So when he wins, he may win MVP this year. So Tigers have been doing all right drafting young hitters lately.
They have. I guess we'll have a weekly Kevin McGonigal WAR check throughout the year. I know like a week ago he was near the top of the list. He's got 1.3 so far F4 in 24 games. I don't know what the B WAR tracker is. I'm sure you got it up over there.
The B WAR. He's right behind Yordan Alvarez, who maybe ends the season in the American League or not.
Very similar players, Kevin McGonigal and Yordan Alvarez. Right. Yeah.
That was the comp everyone was dropping coming out of high school.
I also think it's worth mentioning just the Nationals in general here, because I feel like there are a lot of positive things for them down on the farm. I mean, the low A team for them seems like must-see television, must-see action. Ronnie Cruz has been off to a tremendous start. Eli Willits, obviously the number one overall pick. I think he's been solid. Both Gavin Fien and Luke Dickerson are prospects to know and be aware of. Gavin Fien struggling. I think Luke Dickerson off to a better start. Both Landon Harmon and Miguel Cime have had impressive outings early this year. There's been a lot of talk about the player development changes with Washington. So I'm excited for that group of players. But maybe even outside of low A, a player who I'm really intrigued by, just given some of the changes that we've seen from him, is Seaver King. And I think it's actually a pretty shocking transformation in approach. We got a question from Jeff on Twitter, who asked, what are you seeing from Seaver King this year? Has he made any changes that would explain his improved walk rate and isolated slugging? And I think there are some absolutely real changes that we're seeing with Seaver King. Through 16 games in Double-A, so this is his second kind of tour of Double-A in 25. He spent 80 games there. He's just swinging significantly less frequently. And that was always a big question with Seaver King going back to his college days. He was a hyper-aggressive hitter. In college, that worked for him. I think he swung more than half the time in college. Last year in the minors, he swung, I believe, more than half the time. But you can correct me if I'm wrong on those specific numbers. But he's just much more patient this year, and the walk rate has jumped massively, kind of in concert with that. A year ago, he walked 4.6% of the time in high A, 6.4% of the time in double A, 5.8% overall. It's a 19.2% walk rate so far. And it's like a shocking jump or drop in just swing rate. So there's clearly a change in approach here. And so far, it is working for him, at least in terms of being a productive hitter. There could be some of that like artificial like walk rate just from being passive. I don't know if he'll need just more time to like get his selectivity dialed in, but I'm really intrigued by that change because it seems like a pretty significant change in who he is offensively.
Yeah, it's certainly good to see that from him so far. See if he's able to sustain that long term. I think Devin Fitzgerald has been really good too. That was the, you know, they traded for him from the Rangers last year, or over the offseason at least. And like Wilmington is not, it's not a great place for hitters. He's hitting 333, 463, 519 as a 20-year-old who, I mean, look, as a high school draft pick in 2024, like being in high A is a normal progression, but the Rangers were pretty conservative with him last year. So he mostly was in the ACL and only got 10 games in low A last year. So it is still a pretty significant jump up from what he had faced previously. And for him to get off to the kind of start that he is, I think is really encouraging. Like there's, I think there's a lot of similarities actually between him and Josh Adamczewski they were talking about before, except, you know, Adamczewski's in the outfield already. And I think Fitzgerald is at least maybe not a shortstop long-term, but I think he fits somewhere in the infield at the big league level.
Yeah. Okay, I just want to briefly mention those. It does feel like Ronnie Cruz is a guy who's been all over our prospect wire, just given the performances that he's made. So if you're a Nationals fan, you want more on him, definitely check out all the stuff the prospect team has been doing. I know Josh has been on Ronnie Cruz for feels like multiple years now. Scouts have been kind of buzzing about the player that he could become, and it seems like he might be taking the leap there. So I think there's some fun player development stories just for Nationals fans so far this year. So that is kind of cool to see. I think those were all the specifics I had. Ben, any other players you want to mention? Anything else you want to talk about today?
Yeah, it has been good for the Nationals. James Wood as well, leading the National League in home runs right now, has been a good development story for them. CJ Abrams.
Yeah, CJ Abrams has been on a heater, right?
Yeah, those guys. I'd like to see a little bit more from, you know, like a Brady House or, you know, some of the other young guys. But yeah, I mean, certainly seeing James Wood and CJ Abrams, mm-hmm. I don't know how long CJ Abrams stays in Washington, but either way, that's going to help the Nationals one way or the other.
Yeah, absolutely. And Kevin McGonigal, number 5 in F4 right now, is what I got on my list. He's tied actually for 3rd if we're rounding to the 10th with Ben Rice with the Yankees and Drake Baldwin with the Braves. What do you think?
Just in all of the major leagues. Okay.
Among all major league hitters, I would be kind of surprised if there were any pitchers who were over that. Okay. Cam Schlittler with the Yankees, Jose Soriano. Yeah. Mason Miller. I actually thought about mentioning Mason Miller on the pod. I don't have like a take beyond like he's been incredible, but maybe
I agree. That's also my take.
Maybe my take is that's still, I would rather have Leo DeVries than Mason Miller, just because like, even with how dominant Mason Miller has been, I don't know that he moves the needle as much as like I think Mace or Leo DeVries could move the needle. Is that an insane take to still be on the Leo DeVries side of that trade, even with all the hindsight and seeing what Mason Miller has been doing?
I don't think it's insane. Leo DeVries looks like a perennial all-star shortstop for years to come, and he's hitting well as a 19-year-old in Double A, and is like a borderline top, like he's going to probably be in our top 10 pretty soon, I would think. If I'm sure he's there for a lot of people right now. I mean, he looks looks great, so I don't think that's an unreasonable good take to have.
Lovely. Okay. Well, we'll be back with the Kevin McGonigal F4 tracker. I mean, what are you going to do if he like leads the league and wins above replacement, wins an MVP as a rookie?
That would be.
I mean, the fact that he's in the conversation of the best players in baseball, enjoy it, Ben, while you can. I'm not saying Kevin McGonigal is going to fall off, but like, it's pretty fun. We have to hit our Kevin McGonigal quota for each podcast episode.
Different conversation I probably had September 23rd than April 23rd, but
okay.
Yeah. No, he looks all right.
Yeah, he looks pretty good. Okay, cool. Well, that's probably going to wrap it for us for today's show. We got a mailbag episode coming out next Tuesday. Still time to get in your questions for that specific episode and future episodes. If you want to send us your questions, your comments, your feedback for the show, you can email us futureprojection@baseballamerica.com, where there's contact information in the show notes as always. And there's a ton of content being rolled out on the site at all levels. So we appreciate you guys reading all of that, supporting Baseball America in general, whether that's the website, whether that's the podcast, whether that's the YouTube channel. We just really do appreciate it. So for Ben, I'm Carlos. We will see you guys next time. So long.